Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, Blog Talk Radio, on Tuesday, August 6, 2019. The call-in number is 1-347-857-3293.
Good evening. As you heard from young brother Esteline, grandson of Ralph Pointer, we are going on an adventure tonight with What's Happening. And so without further ado, our theme, or one of our themes, because so much has happened this week, is the masses have no knowledge or interest in how imperialism works at home and abroad. They are merely the pawns and victims of a two-party mythology system. And we're anticipating some special guests this evening, and when they arrive, we will be cutting to them directly. We are hoping that some people will be calling from Boston and that some people will be calling from Philadelphia. Very, very special people. We've had some very, very tragic news, but we've also had a few victories. Without further ado, Brother Ralph Pointer is in the house, and all of your mics are open.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, as Sister Betty said, so much is happening. And one of the things I would like to talk about, but I don't believe we'll be able to talk about it this evening, is the manifesto written by the young man who did the killing, the slaughter, the genocide in El Paso. And has anyone forgotten, or does anyone know, of the history of El Paso and Texas Western 1965 and what it meant? In 1965, the NCAA basketball tournament was held, and the university in El Paso, Texas Western, was in it. But the thing that was amazing about that was they started and finished with seven black players at a time when the rule, the unwritten rule for basketball, now get this, folks, where America has been. The unwritten rule was at home, a basketball team, if they were very radical, could start with three black players. Away, they would have two black players. There was racism in every aspect of American life, and we know what sports look like today, and it was worse then. Those who participated under the most outrageous conditions, and El Paso, Texas, was a place where you could, would you look at that Texas Western and the young players there, it would lift up your hearts. But any victory that is not achieved with struggle is only temporary, and it'll be taken back. And one program, we will talk about that, but not this evening. And so this, I just want people to remember that. That name, El Paso, and we will get to it in coming weeks. But what we're going to talk about this evening, the black vote in America equals a plea for inclusion rather than policy. And policy would be end lynching, end of Jim Crow economics, etc. And lynching has changed, as I quote in my statement, from outdoor lynching to indoor lynching by the courts. And it is still going on today. And you'll hear more about a recent lynching in Louisiana, La Paz, Louisiana, near New Orleans, and with the New Orleans United. And we've had people on to talk about that. You will hear more about that because the struggle is continuing. And along with our theme, black people in America have never been considered in policy, in making policy. And I kind of chuckle when I remember when Jesse Jackson dared to make a statement regarding political policy, the uproar it caused. But that is laughable. Without taking any more time,
the statement
is the masses have no knowledge or interest in how imperialism works at home and abroad. They are merely the pawns and victims of the two-party mythology system. And again, two things to cover. As Brother Raymond Nat Turner suggested that I get the manifesto written by the young killer in El Paso, Texas, and because they're taking it offline, we will discuss that, and we will discuss in future programs the history of black people in the political system. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. The times are such that we're not going to limit our audience to any one thing, but our tradition on this broadcast is that we honor Sister Lynn by always having poetry as part of our program, and we are delighted to see that our poet in residence has returned. We've missed him. Brother Raymond Nat Turner, your mic is open. And I see we seem to have a special guest. 706 are the first three numbers. The last numbers are 3403. A caller, do you intend to speak this evening? We don't recognize the number. 3403. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Brother Nat, Raymond Nat Turner. Your mic is open.
Okay, this piece is it's something I worked on the last day or so, and it's called This Week's Mass Murders. I just walked in the building, and I'm pissed, shaking with anger. Why am I the usual permanent suspect? Scrutinized, looked up and down, looked at sideways. Why must I always remind rent-a-pigs not to worry about me, black identity extremist or bad hombre from below the border or the Muslim, and instead Sherlock, clean-cut white boys, a.k.a. angry gunmen. I just walked in the building, but since I'm here, am I too late for lip service? Another supersized serving of thoughts and prayers? Too late to pin a puff piece on our uniformed hero's swift response? Too late to acknowledge good people on both sides of the guns. Too late to remind them that good guys with guns guarantee better body counts, or that guns don't kill. Or too late to jerk the flag half-staff. Am I too late to tell the American people to shop on? They're safe. Too late to tell them the wall, war budget bigger than 20 countries combined, trade show parade of aircraft carriers, F-16s, F-35s, nukes, predator drones, boots on the ground, military bases pockmarking the globe. Prove it. Am I too late to tell them this is commonplace in places they can't pronounce or find on the map? Too late to tell them wars come home, even to the world's greatest purveyor of violence. Too late to tell them the war on terror can be fought 99-cent store style. Mirrors for tracking the terrorist, razors for them to do the right thing. Am I too late to talk about troubled teens, trials and tribulations? Too late to talk about lone wolves, bad apples with badges, DOA dead on arrival from capitalism, killing us all and blaming our deaths on other oppressed, exploited peoples of African, Asian, Latin American origin? Am I too late to talk about hardworking parents, quiet, normal neighborhoods where whose last lynchings were over 60 years ago. Am I too late to say build a wall between Hitlerite sites, boys' bedrooms decorated with Confederate pulp fiction and Nazi paraphernalia, and medicine cabinets stocked with 77 side effect drugs, Hitlerium, Klanonol, genocidal? Am I too late to say what I'll always say, division/subtraction's the only winning formula for the 1% against class struggle, unity, revolution, socialism?
Well, thank you again, Raymond Nat Turner, a poet that gives you so much to think about, you have to read it and listen to it over and over again, chock full of questions and information, the things that we should be thinking about. Thank you, Sister Bay.
All right. We see a long list of people, so we're going to have to ask all of our panelists to please gauge your time. But as you know, a lot is happening with political prisoners, so we're going to go to Sister Ann Lamb. Your mic is open, but Sister Ann, you may not be able to give as much information. We'll come back to you later in the program, but we'd like you to start off. And again, welcome back. We've missed you. And Sister Nellie, hang in there. We are anticipating that some of the people from Philadelphia, the Africa family, will be calling in. And if they are on the mic, if you give us a shout out before we go to Sister Ann, we'll open. We'll turn the mic over to you.
Hello, Betty. How are you doing?
Yes.
On the move.
So
shout out.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Sister Ann, for understanding. We're going to start off with the bad news, sad news, tragic news first, with Brother Kazi from Boston, Jericho, and then we're going to go to On the Move. Okay, Brother Kazi, your mic is open.
Welcome, Kazi.
Yes. Thank you, Kazi. Sister Betty and Ralph. Thank you for this opportunity to give a shout out, you know, to a courageous soldier who's fallen. One of my comrades, Tommy Bannon, who passed inside Transcendent. You know, I met Tommy in 1979, 40 years ago, around this time, you know, and we first met, you know, in the underground when he was on the 10 most wanted list, sleeping on mattresses, you know, listening to police scanners. You know, Tommy was one of the most stand-up committed persons I met, you know, a true soldier, man, you know. It's a shame that a lot of people don't know who he was, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that's the way, you know, it's been for a lot of our people, you know, who've sacrificed so much of their life, you know, locked up for something he didn't even do, you know. But took the rap for it, you know what I mean? Because
another comrade
had left the evidence on him, you know. That's the kind of person he was.
That was the
that's
most
the kind of person cult. He was, man.
That would have been the most difficult for me, knowing that he took the rap. And it was so wonderful and tragic that Tommy Richard were together. Tommy threw himself under the bus and ended up losing his life in a death camp. He knew what the deal was. And to me,
I know.
This is a major, major sacrifice. And when I think of Tommy, I think up the rebels, presente.
That's right, man. That's right, because, man, your brother, you know, he was true revolutionary, man. You know, He was a true soldier and committed to this struggle, you know?
And this is what this program
people just talk about.
Trying to represent. And for me, this is a failure of our movement that Tommy died in the death camp. And our energy are set to bring our brothers and sisters home, because the criminals are the government that they fought against, and we must make our people understand.
He was stun gunned. He was stun gunned in the courtrooms, man, and was beaten by the prison guards and the marshals, and that's what led to, you know, him being crippled and ended up in a wheelchair, you know, and couldn't walk. You know, they did this to the man, you know.
By lack
it burns in me, man. You know, what some people allowed to get away with, you know, because, you know, we're not that strong. Movement's not that strong, you know.
Yeah.
We can't right a lot of wrongs. We hardly getting our people out, man. We got to get Jan out. Jan's the last one left.
Yes, Jan Lahman.
Of our crew of the United Freedom Front. He's the last one left inside of that crew.
Yes, so that tonight we are so glad.
We're planning an event for Tommy, a memorial for next month, September. And we're going to try and have it on the 13th, if not the 17th. I'm waiting to hear back from some people.
Keep us informed. We find out. We will make sure that everybody in the New York area and in our listening audience knows the time and date of the event and the place. Tommy, one of our great warriors, has fallen inside the death camp. We must work to make sure that Jan Lahman and none other of our political prisoners die inside the camps. Thank you, Kazi, a comrade, activist, along with Jan, Tommy, Ray, etc., the brothers and sisters who fought this battle.
And along with that, one of the ask Ann to hang in there is we got more devastating news in terms of Brother Jaleel Montekin. But we want to tell our panelists' family, please hang in there. We want to give a special space right now to the Africa family. Africa, Africans, are you in the house?
No. On the move.
Okay, what are the last 4 digits? What are your last 4 digits this time?
I can't hear you.
What are your last 4 digits on your phone that you're calling in on?
Oh, 4524.
Gotcha. Thank you. All right. So who do we have the honor of listening to tonight?
I'm Janine Africa, and Jan Africa will be speaking to.
Right on. Welcome.
Welcome, and the mic is yours. The words we're going to be hanging on, listening to every word, so take it away.
All right, there's a very urgent situation that's going on in our family right now. Delbert Africa was taken out to the outside hospital, Geisinger in Wilkes-Barre, with serious health conditions. He was swollen from the waist down to his toes, and we had to put pressure on the prison to give him some medical attention, and they took him out to this outside hospital, and we have not had any contact with Delbert for 3 weeks. He's being held incommunicado, and they refuse to let him talk to move people or his daughter. And we're very concerned because we don't trust these officials. We've had two of our family members killed inside of these prisons, Merle Africa in 1998 and Phil Africa, my husband, in 2015. And we don't want to repeat, because there seems to be a pattern happening here, because Delbert was supposed to see the parole board in September, and we know that they don't want to let Delbert out, but we did not expect them to go to these measures of trying to kill him before he can see the parole board. So we are urging people to call the commissioner and to call the superintendent of SDI Dallas. And we have two phone numbers for people to call. Commissioner John Wetzel, 717-728-2573, and Superintendent Ransom, 570-675-1101, extension 351. The situation is very urgent, and we are asking people to lend their support, expose these officials, and let them know that they are being watched so that this could help save Delbert's life.
Two things. First, repeat those numbers, and then for anyone who doesn't know the story of the Africa family, please give us a synopsis if you can. First, repeat the numbers that we must call.
Okay, the numbers are the Commissioner Wetzel. His number is 717-728-2573. And the superintendent of Dallas Prison, where Delbert is being held, is 570-675-1101, extension 351. And that is Superintendent Ransom. Delbert's number is AM4985. We just wanted to thank everybody, first of all, who have shown their support, made phone calls to the superintendent, made phone calls to the hospital, and kept our family in touch with all the information, if any, that they got, because this is a very serious life-threatening situation, y'all. We have lost a lot of family members outside prison. We had a bomb dropped on our family in 1985 and lost 11 of our family members, including 5 children. I had a baby lost. Janine had a baby lost in the early 70s. We also had 2 sisters and brothers, one brother, Phil Africa, in 2015, who went out for a stomach virus, went out to the hospital for a stomach virus, come back for a week only to die a day later. Our sister Merle, in 1998, went out for a stomach virus. She never came back to the prison. She died. So what we're saying is we have a monumental amount of suspicion against these prison officials because they know, we know what they're trying to do. The genocide that people talk about is being done to move, has been done to move, and we do not trust them at all. After the history that they have with bombing, murdering, jailing our family, we cannot and will never trust them. They came up today with a plan to allow our sister Alberta Africa and Delbert's blood daughter to have permission to get Delbert's records, his medical records. We don't want his medical records. We want to talk to our brother. You know, we want to make sure that he's alive, and they've been holding him in incommunicado. Nobody's talked to him. The only thing that we have gotten from the lawyer is messages that he said he got from the superintendent from Delbert to tell us. We don't trust that. We don't trust it at all based on the history of what this system has done to us. So Alberta tries to call the infirmary to get information since she was told by the lawyer, the superintendent told her to do this. When she calls, they give her the runaround. She never gets anybody to talk to. She never hears from no records about what's happening with Dell or anything. So these people are playing games with our lives. And we don't trust them anyway because they're going to prefabricate some lie to give to Alberta to try to make us believe what they're saying, and we will not believe it. You know, Delbert has always said if there's ever a statement to be made by him or anything to be said by him as far as his health is concerned, he's not going to make a decision without letting the family know. So we know, based on that, now that he has not made any kind of decision for these people to go ahead and do anything to him. And we will not settle for this trick from the prison about Delbert being all right. We will not accept anything from them, period. They can't placate us, and we want to talk to Del. You know, we don't want to hear nothing else about nothing. I mean, it's easy for them to be able to let our brother pick up a phone and talk to his family. There is no reason why they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And this is what we are asking people to call the prison and call the commissioner about, to put pressure on them to allow Delbert to call so we can make sure he's alive. You know, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
A bunch of lies that they always tell. Now, why can't they do that? This is what we want to know. Why can't they give our brother Delbert a call to talk to his family?
Well, my brothers and sisters
do that. They can absolutely do that. There's no reason they can't do that. They're stonewalling.
We have an example.
Go ahead.
Of the conduct of the Africa family. They make decisions together. They stick to the decisions. And therefore, that gives them the opportunity to know when a message comes out, who the message is from, because they're insistent.
Yep, and persistent and consistent.
And so we've had orders this evening. Commissioner John Wetzel, 717, write this down, 228-2573. And Superintendent Ramson, 570-675-1101, extension 351. And we're going to talk. Oh, you're talking about the inmate Delbert Africa, AM4985. And we must prove to them that we are out here and we are watching the way we can do it with a deluge of phone calls to these numbers. Thank you, sister. Is there anything else you would like to say? And know that this program is available for you to bring up anything to talk about the heroic struggle of the Africa people inside and outside of the prison.
Before you do respond, Sister Africa, one of the things I don't know if you can do this, give them the website where your PayPal link is for people who can make donations, because once a family comes out of the death camps, they have financial needs, and it's up to the movement to support you. So if you have a website with a PayPal link and you want to give that, feel free to give it now.
Okay, 1 minute. It's I'm looking for it now. I wasn't expecting to have to do this. Oh, it's...
Well, doing that, do you have any other events that are coming up? Your other sister can tell us about the PayPal.
We're getting ready to have a press conference in Philadelphia tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 at the Philadelphia Student Union at 52nd and Larchwood, and the address is 501 South 52nd Street. And, you know, I don't know if people can make it there, but be on the lookout, and we're keeping updates on the website. Ori Lumumba is keeping people updated. We're constantly putting out any information that we get from the lawyer, and hopefully Delbert's daughter is coming in, and hopefully she will get to talk to Del. That's what she's pushing for, or even to have a visit from Del. So we don't know if that's going to be successful, but that's what we're pushing for, and we hope that she gets it. because we want to see Delbert. We don't, you know, we're going on their word that he's alive. We don't know if he's alive or not. Website for fundraisers is called fundraiser.com/Janet-Janine. That's J-A-N-I-N-E.
Okay, and that's and Janine, or just Janet period Janine?
Janet dash Janine.
Dash Janine. Spell Janine.
Yeah. J-A-N-I-N-E.
Okay, here. Folks, we have our marching orders, and let's prove that this program does mean something. When the prison gets so many phone calls that their connection is shut down, we must thank you so much for that, and Janine.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you all for doing everything that you can to help us.
Before you go, we want you to come back at another time, because your victory is not just a victory of physical freedom. You kept your spirit, you kept your mind together, and we know that you attribute that to the philosophy of John Africa. So we're hoping
that's
at some
right.
point in the future you will come back and talk about John Africa's teachings. That is
yes,
an
oh,
open
look, absolutely. Thank
you.
Thank you, Sister
okay.
Betty. Thank you.
Much
Ralph.
Love.
On the move.
All right, we're going to go to Sister Nelly, who's been waiting, and then Brother Tom. We want you to hang in there. Ann is going to bring us up to date, and I think we have Brother Gil in the audience as well. We're expecting a few other guests, and when they come, we will move on to them. I think I saw Sister Gwen. I hope I did. Because she's got a lot that she's our local organizer on the ground. And as much as possible, we're going to try and keep the mics open. So at this point, Sister Nelly, your mic should be open.
Well, thank you, Sister Betty, and to everyone. And I was really, really grateful for those reports, because when you look at the nonsense of the Democratic presidential candidates and their debates, it's just so ridiculous and so bad and bizarre when you look at the real on-the-ground conditions, and that is of political prisoners, which is something that we must at every turn try to interject, particularly with the black misleadership class such as Kamala Harris. And I don't want to – you have a number of people on the program tonight, but I want to say very quickly that the mass shootings that took place within a span of less than – of about 13 hours from Texas to Dayton, Ohio, is just another indication of the disintegration of American society culture. And it really is, as Malcolm X described, the chicken coming home to roost. That's what it is about. And the social and even economic disintegration parallels with that of the decline of empire. And so when we look at the support for political prisoners, our political prisoners, these revolutionary brothers, it has an international context. It is an international paradigm, and we must never lose sight of that. But the empire is collapsing, It won't be long. There's a globalization and neoliberalism has been exposed, and the rest of the world is moving toward de-dollarization, where the U.S. dollar will no longer reign supreme in the global financial market. So let us understand that these political prisoners of our political prisoners, we must deal with and acknowledge the internationalism of their struggle and of their fight for liberation, the ultimate expression of self-determination for a people. And that is true democracy that this country has never, ever, ever known. So let us support our political prisoners as we do in Black Agenda Report. And I urge everyone, please go to our website, blackagendareport.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Nellie. And Black Agenda Report, read it religiously. There is so much to be said, so much to be learned. Sister Betty.
Okay, without further ado, we want to go to one of the organizers around the People's Movement, because as you know, we do not believe in the mythology system of a two-party oligarchy, as Brother Tom has told us. And we will be getting to Brother Tom and Sister Ann very shortly, but we want to open up the mic of a special guest who's going to discuss further the contradictions and the fall of the collapse of capitalism. Brother Mark Torres, your mic is open. Brother Mark Torres.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thank you.
We're hanging in here waiting for your words of wisdom.
Well, yes, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I just want to thank y'all for having this show. It's great. You know, I was listening to the sister who spoke previously, and the poetry is wonderful. We need that to inspire us. But basically, you know, I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time. I appreciate this. But basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to form our own political party. You know, we need an anti-racist, anti-sex political party that's a pro-environment, you know, against torturing and poisoning our food source and animals. And, you know, it's got to be the backbone, has got to be poor and working people. You know, and so we're working with NYCHA tenants right now. You know, we're not a single issue group, but we got to start somewhere. We're a small group. And what we're hoping is that, you know, we put our little bit in helping form a revolutionary poor and working people's party. Because I think it's more than clear that the ruling class in this country and the capitalist class around the world is destroying the world. It's destroying our lives. You know, it's devastating what they're doing, and yet, you know, a lot of people are still, you know, jumping on the Democratic Party bandwagon or the Republican Party bandwagon or whatever. You know, they're really two wings of the same bird. You know, they both represent the interests of the rich and the ultra rich. And,
right.
You know, we want to be part of the conversation that says, no, you know, we need our own political party. It's way past due. And, you know, I understand if folks support AOC or Bernie or, you know, whomever that's tossed, you know, those, you know, but the problem is that we ain't going nowhere until we have our own political party. And within our political party, people can continue working on those issues that they've been working on for so long, whether it be housing, healthcare, political prisoners, you know, all that has to be part of our political party. And because otherwise, you know, we're going to be spinning our tracks. You know, we really need our own political party. And, you know, we're asking people, you know, to, you know, talk to us. Let's get this conversation going. Join us. If we have to form something new to make that happen, then we'll form something new. But we're trying to put in our little bit in trying to get a revolutionary working class party together. And we're saying we need popular control. We need the control of the people. You know, it's like Brother Huey used to say, all power to the people. That's a real thing. That's a real thing. And that's what we need. So, you know, what? Thank you all for having me on. And is it okay if I give a number so folks can contact us?
Certainly.
Okay. So the number to reach would be 646-271-0129, 646-271-0129. And I want to give a shout-out to Samantha. She's in Florida. An amazing organizer, and she's a founding member of this effort, this project, this political party that we're trying to put together. And, you know, I want to thank y'all. Much love, respect, and always support what y'all are doing. You can always count on me and count on us. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And this is an example of the continuation of the, as PAM Africa has represented, the long-distance strugglers. I believe it was 10, 12 years ago that we were working with you on the housing issue. Every Sunday, going up and down those stairs and passing flyers and talking to people in the Wagner houses, et cetera.
Right.
Yes, the struggle continues, and we must continue. Thank you for that.
Okay.
The number is 646-271-0129 to get in touch with those who are working on housing and the changing of this political and economic system. Thank you, Mark Torres.
I want to also say, Mark, did you say the name of the party, the People's Pueblo Party? Did you?
Yeah.
Did you mention?
Yeah, we named it. I'm sorry, I probably didn't, but it's the People Pueblo Party, and it's basically, it's the people in English and in Spanish, right? Because, you know, we want a party for all poor working people, but, you know, we have to understand that the leading role is going to be the African-American community with the Latino community. You know, we welcome everyone, and we want a class-based party that's anti-racist, anti-sexist. But, you know, we have to understand that, you know, look at the historic role of the African-American community and the alliance between African-Americans and Latinos is what's going to move us to the next level to have our own political party and to make the changes that we need made, you know, which are fundamental.
Well, the more we learn that we will not win until we are able to win together, the closer.
Right.
Thank you for that so much, Torres. Sister Betty.
I also want to acknowledge that Brother Mark Torres is very active in the struggle for control of schools against the charter schools that tried to take over in Harlem. They weren't successful. They knew they'd been in a fight. And we have Sister Gwen on. She's also been very active in that. Brother Tom, your mic is open. Brother Tom Syracuse. I also want to say Danny Villa, Rivera was supposed to be on tonight. He had a community activity. He'll be on next week. Daniel Rivera Villa, he will be on next week again to talk about an alternative to the plutocracy of the two-party mythology in this country. Brother Tom, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Sister Betty. Thank you very much. If you would be so kind to email me and others who didn't have a chance to break down these numbers in support of our political prisoners, to email
yes,
us the telephone numbers so that we can support these our political prisoners who are in these death chant, camps. I know that we're not going to spend much time on these massacres in El Paso and in Dayton, but I just want to make a couple of short observations. It just so happens that one of the 25 Democrat candidates for president represents the district of in El Paso. His name is O'Rourke, and he jumped on the occasion because he's relatively unknown, but now he's much more known. to blame everything, these, and particularly these two massacres on Trump. And I, and of course, this is a huge mistake. Yes, Trump has tapped into the racism, a culture of racism and violence that this country has had ever since Columbus, the first European to set foot in the New World, and this continued through the colonial period, the Pilgrims, throughout our entire history. This country has a culture of racism and violence and this idea that somehow this is a something relatively new is a huge mistake, and it's another mistake to blame this on Trump. Trump has tapped into this racism and violence, and he is not the cause of it. That's what we have to concentrate on, is to address the cause of our culture based upon racism, violence, imperialism, and capitalism in its many forms. And until we do that, we're not going to get anywhere. As evidence in the past, that Congress has never been able to pass a national gun law, a gun control law, which has never mind individual states. And I may make one short observation: the massacre that took place in El Paso in Walmart. Walmart itself sells those very guns that are used, and none of this is brought out in the mass media, because the mass media is nothing but a mouthpiece of the ruling class. And so I look forward to next week when we can talk more about this problem.
Well, thank you, Brother Tom, and to those of you who are waiting, Sister Gwen, we're going to go to you, and Gil, we see you there. We know you've got some updates for us, but we have extended the program. We have until 10:30, so we're going to get everybody, because everybody's message is important, and we can't leave without the updates that Sister Ann also provides. And Brother Tom, Sister Ann always puts up-to-date information on Jericho. I felt like I had gone blind and lost my hearing when she was out of commission there, and we're so glad to have her back so we can have our updates. It was as bad as when we couldn't hear the voice of Raymond Nat Turner. It was horrible. It's like a withdrawal symptoms I was going through. So she's back, and she's sending out those updates and those numbers. Don't you worry about that. Sister Gwen and Brother Gil, hang in there. Sister Gwen, your mic is open, and welcome back. You got sick on us, too. What's going on here?
Well, I'm almost better. I just took a sinus tablet to help the headache, but I'm almost better. It's been 2 weeks of being pretty sick. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to very quickly tag on to what Tom said very quickly, because I have a different point of view. I happen to think that we turned a corner this weekend, and I think that we can no longer be just talking about the argument to have gun control in this country, because I disagree. I think that having the head of your nation give a green light to open racism has changed the picture dramatically, because these events this weekend were racial slaughters. That's what it was. And when one event happened, it seemed that the next event happened right after that. In other words, it was almost empowering the second event for the first event to happen. And so I don't know whether I think the argument anymore is about gun control in America. I think that that President Trump has given his leadership and his blessing to be openly racial, openly radical, and I think that that has changed a lot of things. Yeah, we were limping along for years trying to change racism, but when the head of the nation goes ahead and says, that's okay, there are plenty of people that are listening carefully to what he's saying. And I think that if you keep your eye on just the laws about gun control right now, instead of how this is going to change race relations in America and how more and more people are going to be getting slaughtered because of their racial background, I think that's what's new and that's what's changed. And it's very, I didn't think it was a subtle change, but so many people that I haven't heard anybody on TV speak about that. I just hear the same old crap about, you know, when are we going to have gun control? And then I hear the stupid lectures about let's all pray. And I don't see anything changing at all. But this was a radical departure from where we have been. So I want to say that first. And the second thing I want to bring to your attention is the huge rash of churches in Harlem that are being knocked down by developers to be turned into condominiums. And these churches are magnificent pieces of architecture. This is not junk. One of these churches is a church that was built by the same architect as St. Patrick's Cathedral. And this church is the Metropolitan Community Church, otherwise known as Calvary, and it is slated for full demolition in September. Now, if you can think about St. Patrick's Cathedral going down, then you can visualize what these churches look like. And two have already been knocked down by the United Methodist Church of New York. They are at the helm here. And these churches are being sold for nothing, $16 million. For a building like this and the land that it sits on is a sneeze. It's nothing. And the people that are responsible for this murder are Round Square Builders. I wouldn't give Round Square Builders anything except for a boot in the ass and to get the hell out. But I think that one of the things that's happening here is something that we predicted in when we were trying to stop the upzone of Harlem at 125th Street. We predicted this was going to happen. And so now what's happening is not only are these churches being sold, but the bishops themselves are just keeping the money. It's not going to the parishioners. So we have this inner fight for the people, for the capitalists of the community that have been sitting around for years preaching the good word. Until those dollar signs started showing. And then we have people in the community that don't know how to go about landmarking anything. Right. It's very hard in New York. And to me, Harlem is it's the jewel of New York City. And what makes it the jewel is not just the rich culture, but these magnificent buildings and the low-rise buildings that are still there. And I cannot understand why anybody would want to go there to knock down the buildings. And that is what's, you know, that's what makes it so gorgeous. That's the jewelry of New York City.
They care about the money.
Yeah, well, so I'm gonna take this on, and it's gonna be good. Very, very hard. I did save PS109, but I had a great group with me, and I'm encouraging people. I mean, even if I have to go to this building and handcuff myself to it, I'm gonna ask you guys to come with me. It is wrong to do this.
I would be more than happy to do so.
Okay, because I think it's completely wrong, and I think that these children, this church that they're gonna knock down is where Malcolm X spoke. These all have historical relevance. This is not like, you know, people weren't there that were extremely. And interestingly enough, Reverend Al Sharpton has nothing to say on any of this. He has no comment on any of it. And so I just want to, you know, I just want to put this out to you. This is, I hope that I have enough juice to really do what I do for this. But I really want to put it out there because once these places are gone, they can never be replaced again, and they are absolutely magnificent. So it's the murdering of the culture of Harlem. It's the murdering of the Harlemite buildings. And churches are extremely important because this is where the community gathers. But if you want to bash a community into pieces, then you bash the churches, and you bash schools, and you even bash houses. And this is how you get rid of the residents of a community. And that's the formula that they're using. And interestingly enough, I love to hear people like Gail Brewer who say they don't have any idea of how this happened, except for guess what? She's one of the people that signed for the upzone of Harlem. And Melissa Mark-Favorito, if any of you forget who she is when she comes to be the mayor, if I hear any of you supporting her, you're going to get a big lecture from me, because she is the one who carried the water for Mayor Bloomberg and went ahead and spearheaded the upzone of 125th Street, which is the downfall and the demise and the killing of Harlem. So that's just one of the things that's on my mind this week. Thank you.
Before we go on,
Sister Betty, can I just add, Sister Betty, very quickly?
The Church of the Master has been raised,
and Michael Henry Adams has been trying to get historic preservation here in Harlem for decades, and others with him. But the racists downtown have prevented the designation of historic preservation in Harlem. So we have to remember that. And nobody believes that Melissa Mark-Viverito is nothing but the sweetheart of the developers, as she has always been, down to her townhouse that she won in a lottery.
Well, actually, Nellie, I didn't think she won that in a lottery. I think that was definitely a deal.
She should be in jail for that.
She lied. She lied on the application. That is not something she just won at a lottery. She lied deceived them. She's sitting with $2 million in the bank.
Jest.
All right, we know it's corrupt.
Fun and jest, Gwen.
I take it all very seriously. So excuse me. I don't really joke around about things like that.
That's okay. We know Gwen.
I love you, Betty.
That's ridiculous, but you have the right to your say, but that's ridiculous.
Nellie, do you add anything else to what and Tom, you want to weigh in, and also Mark, all of you have been involved in this fight.
Well, I'm going to jump in on this because in 1965, think of this, folks, Queen Mother raised that issue. She talked about valuable property in Manhattan was Harlem, how we must protect it. And she said, these are her words, if we allow them to put up state office building, Harlem is gone.
She was right.
It's a state building to try to prevent that. And we must remember the role of our Negro. And I'm going to use that as a derogatory term. Our Negro leaders, including the ministers. We were in these fights 20, 30 years ago to stop them from selling church property and putting the money in their pockets.
Exactly.
This
they're
is
still doing it.
Going, and we've seen it, but this is the culmination. Kudos to you, Nellie. Kudos to you, Gwen. Include us in this struggle because we must fight this destruction. And this ethnic cleansing of Harlem, but as Queen Mother said to me, and I remember 1963, Friday evening, going across Harlem, 125th Street on the bus, and she said, look out there, what do you see? And I looked out and I says, well, you know, what am I supposed to see? I see people, I see housing, and she says, what you're supposed to see is Harlem like you will never see it again. It is being destroyed. The program for destruction of Harlem is in advance. And she said, continue your struggle for the community control of the economy of the public schools, because that is the only thing that and save us. We lost, folks. We lost.
Right.
Stroke continues.
Yeah. You know, Ralph, what people don't talk about is, in fact, the properties that are being swindled and stolen from black people, in particular brownstones. This is
what the fortune.
It is not even the tip of the iceberg in terms of what is happening here in Harlem. And we have a neoliberal racist mayor who is trying to convince co-op owners and the HDFCs that they have to give up their homes and become rental tenants because it is in their interest to do so. This man actually promulgates this nonsense publicly again and again and again.
He,
in fact, is snatching up home ownership in Harlem through the HDFC program and transferring these co-op, units, because it's a low-income city co-op, equity co-op, they are transferring this into the third-party transfer, who are nothing more composed of private landlords and developers who contribute to his campaigns. That's how bad it is here.
There
but
you got
I just
it.
Wanted
now,
to add there.
I mean, one thing is, with the Browns running for president, that's Mark, Brother Mark, from the People's Public Party. I live out here on 120th Street. I've been in Harlem for about 40 years. And, you know, with de Blasio, he talks that progressive game, but if you look at what he does, you see that it's really benefiting the developers.
Exactly.
I mean, not only is he devastating the co-op owners, you know, and a lot of their tax abatements are going out the window, so all of their, you know, maintenance and, you know, all these things they have to pay are going up. But he's also privatizing nightclubs. In fact, he said that he's going to tear down the Fulton House in downtown Manhattan. And he's going to give that property to developers. So, you know, the idea is that gentrification is going full tilt. And this is a bipartisan issue. So this is, you know, this country, you know, sent away all his factories and his wealth production through manufacturing, and it started to look at, well, how are we going to make millions and billions of dollars? And his real estate is one of them, and then the stock market is the other one. All these stocks that are overinflated, they're not worth what, you know, these rich people are trading for them. And so, you know, you can see here in Harlem, I mean, the attack against Charlie Rangel, right? I mean, Charlie Rangel is a Democrat, but he was iced by Cuomo and the Democratic machine, and they made this district, you know, that includes Harlem, a majority Hispanic district, so that Adriano Espaillat, you know, could take over and further dilute, you know, it's like divide and conquer, further dilute, you know, what power African Americans could garner as a collective. So, you know, that's why, you know, we're kind of looking at this, and, you know, we're fed up with this, you know, and in our mind, the only way to do this is we got to do grassroots organizing, which a lot of people are involved with, and that's how we get people who are so-called not politically involved. We got to get them in motion and to see that they have collective power, which is what Brother Ralph and others have been talking about, and we need to form our own party. So, you know, just watching what's going on here, I mean, it's the capitalist class run amok. You know, they're destroying communities, destroying people's lives, destroying the planet. And, you know, we got to get serious about, you know, we should have some kind of national convention in this issue, you know, and, you know, build our own party and run our own candidates and do the door knocking like Malcolm told us we got to do. We got to go door to door, you know, and get people understanding what's happening and get people activated and getting them to see that they have power if they act collectively, you know. So, you know, it's really important the conversation is going on tonight.
Right, and Mark, another context is, in fact, the coming crash that is supposed to be worse than 2007, 2008. And it's going to be another economic collapse brought on by the real estate industry, and it will have worldwide ramifications. And I think that's something, but that can become an on-the-ground reality for organizing people, because I'm working with people now in grant housing, and it's incredible what the tenants there are doing. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, yes, this conversation is very important, but I want people to understand. 1995 was when the finalized program for taking down Harlem was formulated by those in power. Think of that. 1995, the truth was very difficult to get to, but the Democratic Party had said they were going to go with this new program to take over Harlem. And it was a done deal. And so that is, what, 23 years ago? And so thievery on the part of our so-called leaders, those Negroes in churches, those lying ministers who took the money and who are taking the money, were scheduling this 23 years ago. This is when I found out about it. It could have happened before then, the destruction of Harlem. And so, folks, we have our work cut out for us, but if we can move on this, because this will continue. This struggle must continue, and we must continue teaching people, and we must understand that we are all on the same page, on different parts of the page. There is no need for anybody on this program to have an argument, because this is where we've all been going for many, many years. We must pull it together.
All right, Tom, did you want to comment? Because you've been another warrior fighting for housing with Mark and Nellie and Gwen. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I just want to say that what's happening in Harlem is happening throughout the city. And in many cities in the United States and in Europe, and it's called gentrification. And this gentrification is supported in here in New York State by the Democratic Party, the city council, the governor, and Mayor de Blasio. Mayor de Blasio's keynote solution for housing is to call the mandatory inclusionary housing and zoning. And what this really is just nothing more than the displacement of working class people, particularly people of color, from their neighborhoods. And it's a racist policy, and this is what people have to understand, that these phony Democrats are no friends of the working class or of communities of color, that they have handed over to the real estate industry billions of dollars to put up these high-rise buildings. They have so-called a few units in the building that are supposed to be affordable, but they're not affordable to the people who need the most, people who are low-income people. So the whole thing is a fraud. And what is needed is what the Puerto Rican people are doing through grassroots mass demonstrations. They have forced the resignation of a high government official, the governor of Puerto Rico. And this is the first time, by the way, something like this has happened, where grassroots people have been able to force the resignation of a governor, whether in the United States or its colonies like Puerto Rico. And so this is the way to go. It just has to be a grassroots mass movement to confront all of this corruption, and hopefully a connection will be made that capitalism corrupts everything. It corrupts religion, it corrupts the schools, it corrupts the media, it corrupts everything, and the only way out of this is a democratic socialism, And hopefully more and more people will begin to realize this.
Thank you, Tom. And one of the things that I wanted to say, this is why Gwen's idea of chaining ourselves to the churches is brilliant. I just love it. But in addition to that, I want to point out that the struggle for community control of schools that we waged in Harlem was also a fight against gentrification, because they tried to do a public school that was successful. So I think the reason they want these schools is at charter schools is, again, they want to give our territory to the corporations, and they want to keep miseducating us. We'll end up in the death camps. Exactly. Without further ado, we want to go to Brother Gil, and then Sister Ann is going to update us on all the other stuff that's been going on. Give us some marching orders as to a tentative time when we should maybe have a conference call around what you want to do.
Yeah, that would be important.
Okay, I'm coming home the next day. I'm still at my mother's, and whatever we do, it has to be done very quickly. And so the way these things work, or the way I had to do this with PS 109, was I had to do a lot of telephone work, and we'll have to – I think what everybody needs to remember about these projects, it doesn't matter whether you have 150 people or five. You just need to find there's a door. There's always a door, and these are always done deals. Before people get discouraged, I would like to tell you a little bit about a little tiny bit about PS 109 so you understand why I don't throw the towel in, because there was a miracle that happened. One day I was going to my school PS 109 in my neighborhood, and I went down and I thought I was seeing a restoration, but when the builder talked, he said, "Oh, no, lady, this is a demolition." I said, "Well, I think this is a very bad idea." And he said, "Well, I do, too." And he said, "Good luck to you." And I said, "Well, good luck to you, because you're the one who's going to need it." And I got home, and I got on the phone, and I did everything I could. I got on the phone, and then I got a petition. I went to the unemployment office in Harlem at that time, and I got 850 signatures in one day, and I delivered them to Charlie Rangel. But most importantly was I got it into the New York Times. And when I got it into the New York Times, that's when people started coming to me that had an understanding of these laws. There are laws that protect these buildings. And one of the things that that most people were ignorant of was that municipally owned buildings that are more than 50 years old have a natural landmark status already. They are already recognized by the National Register of Historic Places. Now, that doesn't give them total coverage, but it gives them some kind of coverage. And so what I keep looking at with these churches is these are magnificent pieces of architecture. These are just by extremely reputable architects. But the thing is, to make a landmark status, you have to have people that were landmark people, and Malcolm X is a landmark person. He is somebody who has status. And so I don't agree that it's just because the buildings are in Harlem that it's hard to get them landmarked. It's almost impossible to get anything landmarked anymore. And if you look all around the city, you will see that. They're not just moving one building. For example, on the Upper East Side, entire blocks are being torn down, whole blocks. Okay. Another church that's going down is called Jan Hus on 73rd Street. Very, very popular church for many, many years. That's going to be knocked down and bulldozed. There was another one on the Upper West Side on West 83rd Street. That was just knocked down. So churches seem to have X's on them. And these are parcels of land that are, you know, very valuable. So if we want to have a meeting, I would rather have a meeting in person, or we can do it on the phone if you want. And I think we should do it. Why don't I just contact Betty and let her know when I'm ready with the information that I can surmise? I'll start working on it, and then we can have a meeting. But I would tell you that this time, in order to get this church saved, we're going to have a chain of people, I think, that are willing to be out there and have handcuffs on and have them remove us, because we need the publicity of doing something like this.
I think that's fabulous.
What about the parishioners themselves? Do they realize that their own ministers are support tearing down their church?
Yes. What I've read about this, Tom, what I've read is the parishioners themselves almost feel like they're just like lambs. They consider these bishops to be bigger than God themselves. And so there's an air of don't ask questions, don't rock the boat. This is what they said. And they always promise them. This is exactly what happened with my church, by the way. My church sold its annex for $25 million, only $25 million. And they ended up using that
guys,
property to build.
Here, we've got two more people, and we want to continue this conversation next week after we do some homework. But everybody who's on tonight's got a promise to call back in next Tuesday. And I'm going to hold you to that. Gil, we're going to go to you. And then, Ann, you've got it. Gil, are you still there?
Yeah. So I've also been out of commission the last 2 months.
Can hardly hear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gil, do you want us to come back to you and let's take Ann's report?
Yeah, go ahead.
Or what?
Go
you
ahead.
Ready? Are you ready with your report?
Yeah, but go ahead. Ann's report is important.
So is yours, so go ahead, Gil.
I've been out of commission the last 2 months with shingles, kidney stones, diabetes. But I'm trying to get back in things now. You know, I've been working with the Green Party, with the Free Mumia Coalition in New York City, and with the Uhura Salari movement. We're having a house party this Sunday, August 11th at 6:30 at 4278 Kepler. You can go to the Facebook page for Uhura Solidarity Movement New York City and find the event and register. It'd be great if people come to that. But, you know, obviously Mumia's health is a big concern.
Yes.
Right now he's got glaucoma and cataracts. But obviously, the Delbert Africa situation takes immediate precedence because of the extremity of the situation. But really, it's all our political prisoners are being, you know, they're aging and they're subjected to medical neglect. So it's really all of our political prisoners and all of us that are under, you know, medical attack. As far as the gentrification thing, I mean, there's obviously battlegrounds all over the city. But one of the central battlegrounds right now is the Bronx.
It's the Bronx is very important.
So I just want to mention that. Groups like the Bronx is Not for Sale and other gentrification groups up there. You know, I'll have more to report on in the weeks to come as I get back in the swing of organizing with these groups. But, we need help. You know, you can join the groups that I work with, but it doesn't really matter. If you join Jericho, if you join Campaign to Bring Mumia Home, Anarchist Black Cross, Mobilization for Mumia, On a Move, any of those groups, we're going to work together. The same goes for any of the socialist parties. It doesn't have to be the Green Party or the African People's Socialist Party. We need to build a larger movement if we're really going to fight, the fascist movement that we were talking about at the beginning of this program that's becoming increasingly violent. Anyway, I want to move on to Ann and her report, but, hopefully in coming weeks we can figure out how to cross-fertilize all these these groups that are working on these issues.
All right, Ann, your mic is open.
Okay, well, it all ties together, you know.
Our
political prisoners. Yeah,
could
political
you hold
prisoners
for a minute?
Are in prison. We're fighting for
Ann, could you hold for a minute? Very important what Gil just said. If we can cross-fertilize all of our organizations, we will get something done. Continue,
that
Ann.
That was the point I wanted to make as well. One of the things that Janet Africa especially has been talking about ever since she walked out from behind the walls is principled unity. I heard her speak on June 8th in Philadelphia talking about principled unity, and so is Janine, but Janet is the one who really speaks to it. She did it at House of the Lord when we were there on that Saturday, speaking about principled unity. Without principled unity, we will be defeated again. We cannot afford to be defeated again. The planet is depending upon us. We are in the middle of the sixth. I count it the sixth extinction. This is what science is talking about. Okay? So we need to be united in principle. We don't all have to agree about everything to be united in principle. And we should stop talking about gentrification. It is mass displacement. Let us call it what it is. Mass displacement is what it is. It is not gentrification. It is mass displacement. When I was a kid, my parents complained when the six-room apartment that we had in Highbridge on 168th Street and Woody Crest Avenue went from $59 a month to $63 a month in 1969. You know how much that apartment must be now? If it still exists, that's the four-bedroom apartment that it was with a living room and a full dining room and a fireplace and a kitchen and a bathroom. It probably doesn't even exist that way anymore. So, you know, we know what we're facing here. You know, mass displacement is happening everywhere. Part of the whole anti-immigrant bullshit has to do with mass displacement as well. I live in an immigrant community. This is basically a Central American and Dominican community where I live, and also a whole bunch of people from West Africa. So, you know, it's very interesting and diverse community, but there's a lot of fear here right now, a lot of fear, you know. Immigration, you know, all this shit going on, you know, we've all been through it before. I remember the 80s and the sanctuary movement before. And this is what all our political prisoners are in prison for. They were fighting for the same things. Housing, health care, education, human rights, you know, the miseducation of our youth, the mind control. It has gotten worse and worse and worse. It is worse now than it was when they went inside. And that's part of what, you know, the Moore family is very strong. But they still have to deal with that. They come out of the walls and they see it's a lot worse than it was when they went in. And they can know that in their hearts inside. But it's another thing to live it and see it. You know, Seth is going through that. Herman is going through that. People of Sekou is going through that. People who have sacrificed major, and then they come out and they're like, oh, my God. You know, it's even worse than what it was when we went inside. So, you know, then you say, Jesus Christ, you know, or whatever you want to say. Oh, my God, you know. Was it in vain? No, it wasn't in vain. We know that. But you got somebody like Tom Manning, as Kazi was saying. You know, people didn't know who Tom was. And people should take the time to know who Tom was. I had Brown, the Ohio 7, on trial. And we will make sure that that goes up on the website. We have Tom Manning's beautiful museum-quality artwork. And I will talk with Kazi. But it has already been suggested by people who did time with Tom. They want to write things and produce a journal for this memorial, including, of course, his artwork, which is beautiful, his own poetry, his own writings, which we do have some of, you know, the books that he produced. You know, these things exist and are real. I mean, Tom was one of the most beautiful people you would ever want to meet, and he was never about himself, which is what all our prisoners are like. So one of the things I've had to do in the past week since Tommy passed was tell people that Tommy passed. This is one of the most onerous tasks that we have to do as Jericho. I had to tell Jaleel. He called me on the phone. We had a conversation. I said, are you sitting down or holding on to a wall? And he said, well, I can't sit down. I'm holding on to the wall. I said, I have bad news. And I told him what it was, and he was devastated to hear. And then I also told him what was happening with Dell. And he already knew about Maroon and the cancer. So, you know, we have serious situations going on with a lot of our prisoners right now. Everybody's getting older. Nobody's getting younger. You know, Leonard's got a lot of health problems. Matulu had a major stroke a few years ago. He's got a lawsuit going on. Imam Jamil just got turned down for that whole court hearing that he did. They said, oh, yeah, there was prosecutorial misconduct and constitutional violations, but you ain't getting a new trial. So, you know, that's bad news, simultaneous with Tom dying. So, you know, the state has made it very clear the level of visceral hatred, the level of revenge that they have against our political prisoners. Tom Manning didn't just die in prison. They killed Tom Manning, just like they're trying to kill Bell Africa. Tom wrote
Mumia.
To... And Mumia, you know, and everybody else. Tom wrote to Ray Luke, who's another co-defendant of his, on July 15th, saying, look, I had a heart attack. I'm not getting medical attention. I need help, right? Ray Luke got in touch with Tom's family. They arranged for a lawyer to go. They were working on it. People were starting to make these phone calls. You know, there was movement going on. And then he had another heart attack, and he died, all right? And as Kazi was saying, they stun-gunned Tom in the courtroom. When they captured Tom, they broke his shoulders. He had a problem with his knee, had a broken knee that was never properly set. That's why he was in a wheelchair. The man was in constant pain. And one of the most recent things he did was mentor Little Feather from the No Dapple movement. Little Feather was not supposed to go to a maximum. Little Feather was sentenced to a medium, right? And he ends up at Hazelpin. And right after Whitey Bulger got killed, and he didn't know who Whitey Bulger was, but he knew that some old white inmate had just gotten murdered. So he was a
little... Well, thank you for that, Ann.
And
we're
Tom
going
Manning took him under his wing and said, not to worry, you come and hang out with me. And there are pictures of Little Feather together with Tom, in addition to all the other pictures that we have, and we're trying to get those as well, because those would be some of the most recent examples of who Tom was and the bigness of his heart.
Listen in next week and to hear more of what we are projecting. Education, 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 and our priorities are the same. Free our political...
Absolutely. Free them all, and we'll have more. So, you know, we're going to have to keep doing that.
Thank you all, and
thank you, Sister Betty. Love this song.
Love it.
Yeah, let's sing along. Nina Simone.
I wish I knew how it feels to be free.
To be free.
I wish I could break
all the chains
holding
me.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
Say
them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish.